All right, welcome back, or welcome to the Student Success Exchange Podcast, a series of deep conversations about real student stories between a student affairs professional and the students he serves. I'm your host, David Ipyam. I'm a student affairs and services practitioner by profession. And when I'm not in the office, I work with fellow colleagues and professionals to elevate their game through change leadership, that's through davidipyam.com, with families to learn martial arts through mindovermatterkarate.com, and with couples to maximize their relationships through relationshipzen.ca. I nerd out about anything leadership development, including student success. I'm very excited to share with you this episode with Deanna. First, because her story spans her undergraduate to graduate to career journey, which is unique for this podcast. Second, I think you'll be inspired by how she connects her personal, academic, and professional lives and interests so seamlessly. We also nerd out a little bit about the graduate student experience with research. So Deanna Paolantonio is a proud alumnus of York University. Dr. Paolantonio completed her doctorate in dance studies in 2018 after a long academic career as both an undergraduate and master's student at York. Deanna's experiences allowed her to combine her interest in dance, dance education, body image, and type 1 diabetes. Moreover, it was through researching, writing, and defending her dissertation at York that Dr. Paolantonio was able to create the foundation for her nonprofit dance workshop, D-Dance Inc. In this podcast, Deanna outlines how her time at York contributed to her own success cultivating a career path that is fulfilling both professionally and personally. This episode has a lot to share, and if you love it, please share it with somebody else. All right, so I'm here with Deanna, our guest for today. Do you have good memories of York? What's a favorite memory you have of your time here?
I do. I have a lot of good ones. I'd say the biggest one that comes to mind is just that first semester that I had, first semester, I was in the dance program. I wasn't sure exactly what that was going to look like or how I was going to feel about it. I think like most first year students do. And I loved it. I remember it was long hours and early mornings and lots of moving and lots of studying, but I was happy. I was extremely happy and I was very content with the choice I had made. Aside from that, I'd say the beginning of both my PhD and my master's were just exciting times. I loved going to seminar and having discussions and about things I was passionate about or just interested in learning about.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And so we talk a bit off air on this about this, but typically I usually connect with students to bring on the podcast who I know have worked with, but you found out about this through LinkedIn and we discovered we had a connection from a summer camp we worked at
many moons ago.
So what made you think about, you know, hey, I want to share my story on this podcast?
Well, I think that my experience is one that I think a lot of people have, but they don't necessarily voice, which is you're in academics for many years, maybe for an undergrad, maybe some grad school. But I was always a student who loved studying, but was also really interested in methods and the doing of what happens, not just here, but what happens outside of these walls. And so I'm someone who's been able to, I think, take what I learned here and take the different pieces that I brought together through my experiences here and create a career path for myself that brings everything together and in a way that I'm very happy, that I think I'm going to be very happy, that academics doesn't just always mean I'm going to be a professor. Mm-hmm. There's a lot you can do with your education and I'm trying to make the most of it.
Mm-hmm. And yeah. And was that kind of intentional approach, intentional, or sort of did it kind of emerge as you went through your student journey?
No, it emerged. And a lot of times if I've ever been asked to give a guest lecture, like throughout the course of my studies or even after I've had the opportunity to speak at a few different conferences, I always describe my experience as a giant jigsaw puzzle. I'm still solving it. Mm-hmm. I had different pieces fall into place during the time that I was here at York, which was a span of between everything, postdoc and all, 12 years, which is quite a long time. And the picture got clearer and clearer, and sometimes pieces fit that I didn't want to have fit, but you make sense of them. And I think that the research process helped me make sense of those pieces and brought me to where I am.
Okay, yeah. So let's dig into that student journey then.
Yeah.
If you had to like think of it like a book, like the chapters of your student journey, mm-hmm. could you walk us through the main chapters or parts of the book so we get a picture?
I'd say the earliest chapters would be dance and education. Mm-hmm. I came to York at 18 thinking I was going to do the dance program. I was going to do the concurrent education program. And I was going to be an elementary school teacher. Mm. I mean, our connection was Seneca College.
That's right.
There's a reason why I was in dance camp and working with kids, because that's what I thought my life was going to be. Found out in that process that I really liked being able to not just dance and not just teach dance, but I took a course called Introduction to Dance Studies. Mm. And it's essentially what I ended up doing in my grad school, but people write about dance and they write about any aspect of it. And for me, obviously, I was very passionate about education, pedagogy, how to make dance more accessible and better in schools. So I'd say early chapters was all about that. It was discovery and education and dance. The next chapter was going into my master's, and then things became more about student confidence and getting very passionate about body image, mm-hmm. Very passionate about what it is that motivates students to participate in the classroom, recognizing that there is a performative aspect to student life, mm-hmm. That sometimes just raising your hand and answering a question.
Yeah, you're absolutely
daunting.
Right.
Daunting.
Yeah, I haven't thought of that as a performance, but then performance anxiety can show up in that moment
as
well.
In that moment, and it's a short moment. Yeah. But then, you know, what role can dance and the arts, because they are performative in and of themselves, play? Mm-hmm. So for the master's, my project really revolved around bringing specifically Zumba fitness into dance, into the schools, because I'm a Zumba instructor part-time. I was all through school. And seeing if regular involvement in that and the process of learning those dances and mastering those dances helped with confidence.
Right. What did you find?
I did find that the more that they allowed themselves to just move, and the more that they got comfortable with that, the louder and more social they got.
Interesting.
But I also found that the one resounding negative that kept coming up was concerns around body image. The telltale, I exercise because it makes me skinny, and then that's better for some reason. I hated that. Mm-hmm. I absolutely hated it. And I said, this is terrible. I need to do something about it. Mm-hmm. Paired with the fact I had been bitten by the research bug, mm-hmm. I knew that I needed to do the PhD. Mm-hmm. And so I'd say that the next chapter was going into that. That's where I'd say one of the pieces I was not expecting fit into place. 2 weeks after being accepted into the PhD program, I was diagnosed with type 1 diabetes. For those who don't know what I mean by type 1, there's different types of diabetes. Type 1 is specifically an autoimmune form of diabetes. So it essentially means that my body got confused, attacked the cells in my pancreas that create insulin, which helps us to maintain homeostasis for our blood sugar. And so therefore, my pancreas is now just unable to make insulin. And without it, I would die probably within a few days. So it's quite severe. Mm-hmm. It's more common that people get diagnosed in childhood or teenage years, but we're finding with research that more and more people are getting diagnosed in their 20s, which is when I was diagnosed. Mm-hmm. So that last chapter really is, I'd say, a combination of Deanna finding her own resilience. It was me figuring out, can I still be the dance scholar? Can I still be the fitness instructor? Can I still be Deanna the dancer if I have diabetes?
Right.
I don't know.
So it was a bit of an identity
identity reconfiguration. I was heading into a new phase that I actually, for the first time, thought, I know what I'm going to do. I'm going to do my PhD. I'm going to expand on body image. I'm going to figure out and make a program that uses dance to help with body image, and maybe I'll work for the school board. You know, I thought I knew what I was going to do, and then this hit. The interesting part of it is that next last, I'd say, phase of my research really is Deanna owning her diabetes, and in the most meaningful way possible, because I fought it for that first, I'd say, 2 years of my PhD. Delved ridiculously deep into body image, and denied the fact that the reason I was probably so interested was because I was having personal issues accepting my own reality.
Right. So like a bit of, externalizing the issue you're
really, I understand. Yeah. I think, it's building a new relationship with your body.
Right.
I had to be my own pancreas. And being a pancreas is not an easy job.
Right.
There's literal highs and lows with blood sugar. There's a lot to learn in regards to medication, how to administer it properly, how to eat, how to exercise, how to dance, how to just go shopping or vacuum. Yeah. The simplest things that I never thought about doing, eating a sandwich, not eating a sandwich, become scary when you're in that process of learning.
Right.
And in some instances, in those early days, it felt like I'm never going to be able to do this again. Like life is never going to be normal again, quote unquote normal. But so I think I was struggling to accept it myself. I didn't talk about it. I didn't really tell anyone about it. But luckily at York, we have a fantastic group of people who are in the kinesiology department. I sent an email to, it's Dr. Michael Riddell. He's a researcher and professor in kines here at York. Just a Hail Mary email, because I read that he has type 1 as well. He does major research into exercise and type 1. And I thought, maybe he can help me. Maybe he has a research study. I can be a guinea pig and it'll help me in some way. Never thought he'd answer. I think he answered within like 2 hours. Wow. Yeah. We had coffee. I met with his research assistant, Desi, who is also now Dr. Desi Sarajeva. And she was also a PhD candidate at the time, also has type 1. And we became friends. And I think finding community on campus really made me feel like, okay, I'm definitely in the right place. There's a reason why I'm doing this and why all this is happening. And in discussions with him and in continuing my research, while I was in the process of, actually, I think I was even in the process of actually doing my field research at that point, I kind of said to my supervisors and also to Mike, who was not my supervisor, but a friend, I think diabetes needs to be in this dissertation.
Wow.
And he went, of course it does. And so did my supervisors.
I'm starting to get a picture of the jigsaw you were talking about.
Yes.
Pieces coming together. Yeah. So finding the community, finding the professor.
Yeah.
Not only for academic subject, but something very personal.
Personal.
And then now finding a way to integrate that into your own research.
Okay. Yeah. So then that became that my chapters were, yes, there was one on the public school setting running my program. There was one on the private school setting running my program. But the last chapter became about running my program with a group of type 1 diabetic dancers.
Ah, okay.
And that's ultimately where my postdoc went, that specific chapter. Because in the end of it, quite honestly, in discussions I had with my supervisors in the dance department, as well as my research buddies that I found here at York, my niche was no longer just going to be, I'm Deanna, the doctor of dance who does body image. It was, I'm going to be Deanna, the diabetic doctor of dance. That is why I'm doing this. Mm-hmm. There's a community who needs this, who isn't being talked about, and they need someone to do it. So that's what I'm going to do.
Was there a moment when all that came together? Like, or was
it? I don't know if it was like a specific moment, but I do remember having the thought in my head and speaking to my parents and being like, am I crazy or does this make total sense before I go and talk to like people at the university and make myself look like a fool? And they just went, yeah, like that makes total, like we're not scholars, but I mean, scholarly stuff aside, it totally makes sense that you can write about that and that you could research it and speak about it from a personal perspective.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Now you you mentioned a program that you're running,
yes,
right? Public, private, mm-hmm, and then...
and the diabetic population.
Correct. Mm-hmm. So you were doing that alongside your...
Like, that was the dissertation.
Oh, okay.
Dissertation was because I've always been an education girl. It was that I was going to essentially write a dance program that, or maybe not a program, but a curriculum of sorts, a guideline for how teachers could approach teaching dance in a body positive way. Hmm. What would that look like? What would that be? So I created a model, which I called the positive body image model, very creative, in my dissertation. And those, the three factors that I paid attention to were body functionality, belonging, and body-based aesthetic ideals. Mm-hmm. And that those that. Were the three things that I tried to create my curriculum paying attention to. And then those were the three things that in each setting I paid attention to, how students responded to them. How did the setting affect it? And it always came down to the fact that as the setting and the students changed, maybe one or two of them were satisfied very easily, but there was always one that was more difficult. So for instance, with the diabetic population, body functionality is somewhat compromised because they know I'm a type 1 diabetic because my pancreas doesn't work. Mm-hmm. Belonging was great in that specific setting because every dancer in the room had type 1, which is not the norm, right, for them. But in that setting, was very easily satisfied. Body-based aesthetic ideals in that room, again, easy because everyone is probably wearing an insulin pump, a CGM, right, which is a continuous glucose monitor, or some type of something that has to do with diabetes. But outside of that classroom, I mean, if we really think about the image of a dancer, you don't think of them wearing medical equipment. Mm-hmm. But in this setting, we could dance together, we could talk about those ideals, wow, and sort of pull them apart. Wow. And so, yeah, so it was sort of me bringing that curriculum together, figuring out what those three factors meant in different settings, and giving just, a snapshot to any teacher or any educator who might read it and want to do the same for their students.
Yeah. And earlier, I think you were talking about bridging, pardon me if I'm, mm-hmm, putting words in your mouth, that theory practice. So that program you were actually running with people,
yes,
right?
With, yeah,
with a program. Students. Yeah, with, yeah, students. Are you still connected with that program? What's that like?
I am. For the postdoc, I decided that I wanted to expand on that last chapter, the diabetes chapter. And so I incorporated it. It's called D-Dance, mm-hmm, for diabetes and dance, but also Deanna and dance. I'm just all the alliteration. That's what I went with. And it's a program that I run different studios. I book space. We do some social events. So for instance, November is Diabetes Awareness Month. So on the 23rd this year, we're doing a flash mob at Union Station. We did it last year as well. I speak at and teach dance workshops at different conferences that have to do with diabetes, which the big one is Friends for Life, which, mm-hmm, is for families and children living with diabetes. Mm-hmm. But D-Dance itself is a day-long workshop. I ran it for the first time last February, like as a full day, not just a like a 1 hour or whatever workshop. Where we did it at the National Ballet School of Canada.
Right.
They run a program called Sharing the Dance, where they donate studio space to people to use for that purpose. I called up some of my friends that I went to York with, and they taught dance classes. I taught a dance class, and in between we had diabetes education. Mm-hmm. So talking about some of those factors of how does your body function and how do you prepare if you're performing. Mm-hmm. If you're in a dance class, what do you need in your dance bag? How do you count your carbohydrates before you eat? So let's practice that together. There's a nurse in the room to help with lows or highs that happen. Right. And families at the same time, parents are allowed to stay. And I had JDRF, which is the Juvenile Diabetes Research Foundation. They gave a talk and sort of led a discussion for parent support of like, how can we support you better? And what are the main roadblocks and what can we do? Mm-hmm. As well as some of the just big companies who make the technology necessary for helping to control diabetes. Mm-hmm. They were sponsors, and so they were there as well to give some education to families.
Bringing in many partners, looking at the various needs holistically, right?
Yes, the medical, the social, yeah. The family.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. So one thing, I mean, many things inspire me about your story. Mm-hmm. And one thing I think that is quite unique, at least in when I think about it, is mm-hmm. the nature of your story, where you're able to connect your personal with your academic with a sort of a passion project, maybe even, yeah.
It's a non-for-profit.
Right, with a non-for-profit.
Yeah.
What advice do you have for students who are looking for ways to connect their academics to something like a passion project of theirs? As I think often they're disconnected. Mm-hmm. There's nothing wrong with disconnected.
No, there's nothing
wrong.
But
for those who are kind of listening, say, hey, yeah. I think I want to connect the two. Yeah.
I think the first thing is you need to nail down what it is you're passionate about. Mm-hmm. And then you need to look at what companies, what other organizations are doing work that relates to it. Mm-hmm. I did a lot of research in regards to finding out, are there other people that are doing recreational, active type work with diabetics from an educational perspective? And there are, mm-hmm. But just none of them are doing dance.
Right.
And
yeah.
So then that was, okay, well, that's a gap that I'm going to fill.
Yeah.
But if I was somebody who doesn't want to go through that, you know, I'm going to fill a gap. Maybe you find that organization, maybe you find that company, and you say, I want to work for these people.
Right. Sometimes there's pressure to start something new,
you
but actually there are others.
Yeah. And I honestly, through the course of everything, I started out by just going to events with organizations that did work in recreation and diabetes, just yeah. attending them. Mm-hmm. I ended up eventually being a bit of a camp counselor at one of them. And then from there, went to creating my own thing. But yeah. I think it's a process. And I think the more you can get involved with the key players,
yeah,
that's how you do it.
Right.
Obviously, some passions will be harder to
right.
connect
get to
than
know
others.
The landscape, right?
But then maybe you find, you know, I don't know, if someone is really passionate about a particular animal, maybe they're in, mm-hmm. in that. I mean, maybe the World Wildlife Foundation doesn't have someone that knows a whole lot about that sect. Mm-hmm. That's what you bring to them. Mm-hmm. But first you have to start working with them, or mm-hmm. you have to figure out what types of jobs connect to it.
Yeah, that's great.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was great. Mm-hmm. were you still going in your chapters
no.
or can I
no,
go back?
It.
There's a couple, two things I kind of noted here. If you don't mind, what was it like to receive the diagnosis?
Mm-hmm.
Let's talk about that.
It was shocking. Mm-hmm. I was shocked. I didn't notice the symptoms as they were happening.
Didn't or did?
I didn't.
Did not, okay.
No, there was always an explanation. For those who don't know, the main symptoms are you lose weight very quickly, you're extremely thirsty, and you have to run to the washroom all the time because you're drinking so much water, and you're tired. You're extremely tired. I made sense of it because I was training for Tough Mudder. I had just finished my master's. There was just a lot of life happening at the time. And I mean, who's not tired? I mean, I'm going to think I have diabetes because I'm tired. No. But I received the diagnosis. I remember it was April 18th, 2014. It was Good Friday. And I was shocked. Mm-hmm. It was shock. It was being angry at my body. I felt like I had done everything to take care of it, and mm-hmm. it had just broke, right? And I felt like it was going to affect every part of my life, and I thought it was going to be negative in mm-hmm. every single way. I thought there was no way this is going to be a positive. Mm-hmm. Everything's just going to be harder. And that was true for quite a while. Mm-hmm. But you figure out how to turn it into a positive. Mm-hmm. I mean, you kind of have to. Mm-hmm. Nobody wants to stay upset for the rest of their lives. There's good days, there's bad days. But for the most part, I think I've made sense of it. Mm-hmm. But yeah, the diagnosis was just pure and utter shock.
You know, hindsight's always
2020.
Yeah. But for your undergrad and master's, were there mm-hmm. other, what was that like for you in terms of your approach to your student experience? Like, was it easy, hard, or what was the texture around that?
I think that undergrad and master's was, I was, It was busy. Mm-hmm. I was just trying to meet as many people and do as many things as I possibly could. York has a really great connection to the community that surrounds it. And so I did a lot of work with, it was a program called Art Starts After School that ran through a professor, Mary Elizabeth Manley, who was in the dance department. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I think that those years were really just characterized by me. I was really focused on getting out. Mm-hmm. I really was. Mm-hmm. I was focused on do what you need to do to become a teacher in the school board.
So that would have been the undergrad chapter,
that was the
right?
undergrad and even the master's. Because, okay. I mean, at the time when I graduated, and unfortunately it's still the truth now, there weren't a lot of teaching jobs.
Yes.
I applied to boards. Never
so
got
this
a
was pre-research bug. The research
this was
bug
pre-research
was really
bug. I was after. Not bitten okay. by the research bug till okay. my master's. Because that's, I think my master's, I mean, it was the first time I really, it's so cool, I think, to have an idea or a question in your head and have it evolve over the course of time. And the question I had going in was not the question I came out with.
Yeah.
And the project I thought
but
I was
the research
going to,
question.
Yeah, the research question. It changed. Yeah. It got more specific. It got more meaningful. And the work that came out of it was different than what I thought I was going to do, but it actually answered, I think, a better question. And so mm-hmm. I think it contributed more.
And remind me, the initial question and then the final question was?
For which one? Masters?
Masters, yeah.
Masters, I initially thought I was going to find out if regular involvement in physical activity through Zumba Fitness would render higher results in EQAO.
Nice. Okay. Yeah.
That's what I thought.
Yeah, you need your data sets. And then, okay, makes sense.
And the final question, I forget the exact wording, but it was essentially, does regular involvement in still dance through Zumba Fitness render student leadership for adolescent girls in elementary school classrooms? Something to do with that.
And it evolved with you. And then just so we get all one picture, the PhD question was?
The PhD question, it was very long. But it was along the same lines of using dance as a tool for promoting positive body image in adolescent girls of a particular age. Does a particular form of dance do this? Does a particular setting do this? And how does, or what are the most important factors that teachers need to take into account when teaching dance in a body with the goal of encouraging positive mm-hmm. body image.
Mm-hmm. Oh, and I forgot the postdoc, right? So there's
the postdoc was mainly, I mean, it did obviously have a question, but the postdoc was surrounding founding and running D-Dance.
Okay.
And finding out at a deeper level, what are the issues for that community, for the type 1 community? How can we assist them? And I used some social media as well in it because I hadn't done a lot of that with the PhD to try and make it so that the experience isn't just for the hour or two that we're physically in the space together, mm-hmm. that they can take it with them and still dialogue in between.
For that community.
Sense of community, to try and keep that building.
Yeah. And so in speaking with some graduate students, I find, actually, I can even relate to this, but the idea of the research question changing and evolving. Mm-hmm. So when you apply to grad school, at least when I applied, I wrote out like, here's my question, here's my methodology, thinking like it's all, then I get
it's
in.
Set. No.
Yeah, it's set. And then I start the PhD and they said, well, no, just do your coursework. Forget about that stuff. Let it flow. So was that your experience too? And
100%. I thought I knew my question.
Is that normal?
I thought I knew. Like, I think it's 100% normal. Yeah. It's not reality, but you know, I thought I knew my question. I thought I knew my scholars. Like, these are my people.
Oh yeah, right?
Like
yeah.
these I'm going to talk about John Dewey and only John Dewey. Yeah. Like, no, you're not. You
and
know,
you
I'm
going to
talk about
these...
Judith Butler and that's it. I'm right. not going to find anybody else that's going to talk about anything mm-hmm. better than she does. Mm-hmm. No. I was
you find
wrong.
Subfield after subfield.
Subfield after, and you just dive deeper and you find more and you figure out more interesting conversations to have that don't build on just the things that you. I think that when you come out of coursework and you've read certain scholars that are the base and maybe a few others that are choice ones from your prof, you start to see that it's more interesting not just to, you need to know the basics, need to know the forefathers. Ara and the four mothers. But that's not where the conversation ended.
Right.
And the whole goal that I had, and I think most grad students have, is that you have this area of study that you're passionate about and you want to contribute to it some way. Mm-hmm. I fell in love with dance at four, purely because I liked dancing. I think I knew very early on that I did not just want to dance my whole life. I loved reading. I loved writing. I always wanted to write a book. Mm-hmm. I thought I was going to write Nancy Drew novels because I was a mystery nerd as a tiny kid. And so I knew I had that side. Came to York, thought education, I'm going to teach dance. That's how I'm going to keep it alive for myself. Yeah. I think as most people do. But then fell in love with the writing about it and the teaching about it. Right. And so I think that's what I think that's why the research question changes, because you figure out what's my contribution. Mm-hmm. Who do I want to have conversations mm-hmm. with? Is it just John Dewey and, you know, like Judith Butler and yeah. like, are these the only people I'm going to talk to? No, because they set the foundation. Now it's your job to build.
Yeah. And I think that's where a lot of the excitement comes from, and, yeah. and taking that leap. The curiosity kicks in.
Yeah.
So in what ways then have you changed or remained unchanged mm-hmm. based on your experience at the university?
I'd say that I am unchanged in the sense that I'm still the same, I guess, bright-eyed and bushy-tailed student that I'll always be, which is that I'm constantly looking for new things to learn. New things to do, new opportunities to pursue. I still love teaching. Truth be told, I'm not here anymore, but I miss being a TA. I miss oh, yeah. having those conversations and teaching about subjects and sharing my experience and my knowledge. I miss seminars. I mean, I love that. I think that thirst for knowledge and that wanting to do that never goes away. I'm changed because I think I have a much clearer view. Again, coming back to that contribution, where my contribution needs to be. Mm-hmm. I think I figured out in my time here who I am as a scholar, who I want to be as a professional, and what I want to do with my life. Mm-hmm. It helped me to separate what are subjects that I just kind of like, but what are the things that like light me on fire? Mm-hmm. And not only that, but where are my strengths? So theory is great, and some people are fantastic at it. It was not my strength. It was very hard for me. I can make everyone talk to each other. I can read and understand the theory. I wasn't passionate about it. Mm-hmm. But when it came to methods, and it came to going in the field and teaching people and figuring things out and putting it on paper, that's where the fire was.
Yeah. To thrive, you don't have to be passionate about the whole process.
I don't think you do. Mm-hmm. I mean, yes, to get through it, you unfortunately have to go through the rigor that is a theory chapter, a methods chapter, and some other chapters, maybe on history or depending on your subject. Everyone does it because then you've done it. But I think by doing that, you figure out not just where your strengths are, but I mean, let's face it, we all like what we're good at. Mm-hmm. Right? There's a reason why teachers teach and firefighters fight fires and, you know, because we're good at certain things mm-hmm. and you learn what that is. And I think that's what I did here. Mm-hmm. And so I'm changed because I no longer think that I have to be good at all of the things.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
I know I'm good at talking to people.
Right.
I know that I'm confident public speaking. Mm-hmm. I know I'm confident teaching and sharing my ideas, whether it's on paper or in person. And that has all come in handy and all come into play with D-Dance and even in the role that I'm in now with a pharmaceutical company where I'm speaking with doctors and I'm speaking to them about treatments and I'm having to articulate it to them, why it's important, who it could be for. And if I don't know their question, the answer to their question, I need to be confident enough to say, I don't know that, but let me go get that answer for you and come right back. Mm-hmm. And I don't think I could have done that's like the deer in the headlights student mode
right.
of I have to know everything and I have to know it now.
Right.
You don't.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Thank you. And can I be so bold as to ask then what is your life mission or purpose, because as it is today, right?
Yeah.
It's allowed to change.
Yeah.
Because one of the concepts that are important to student success, at least in my view, is one of them is sense of purpose, right? Yeah. And I draw on some stuff at York that mm-hmm. we talk about that important. So how about you? What's your purpose?
I think my life purpose is that I am going to, I hope, help people who go through something similar to what I did, whether it's type 1 diabetes or type 2 or some other chronic illness or just a difficulty, a difference. Because I think that everyone feels different at some point, whether it's physical or emotional. For me, dance was the tool that honestly, it makes me feel better. It gave me a sense of purpose and a sense of community. And if I could and if I can work hard enough to reach as many people as possible with D-Dance, reach as many people as I can through my work with the pharma company, at conferences, doctors, whomever, I think that's my purpose. My purpose is to be able to be a living example that hard things like T1D can happen, but you'll be okay. Mm-hmm. And that there's a lot of people out there to help you. And you're not alone.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Thank you. So now connecting it back to the students, student experience, mm-hmm. how do you define, think about, or articulate student success for you?
I think success would have been defined by the old Deanna as an A on my report card. I no longer think that way. I think student success is coming out of whatever experience it is learning something. Mm-hmm. So if you failed or didn't do as well or didn't get the results you wanted, why? What could you have done differently? How would you do it differently next time? How can you apply it to the next challenge? I think you only aren't successful if you walk away from something and don't think about it. Mm-hmm. Every experience is meaningful. It's just you have to pay attention. And I mm-hmm. think that'll lead to success eventually in any part of your life because mm-hmm. you're being mindful. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah. So given that definition then, what should be the goal of academic institutions then to foster that kind of success? Or what kind of conditions can they put in place to promote that?
I think that, I mean, unfortunately, like obviously in an academic institution, it's course, you know, assignment, mark. That's right. How we work. But I think if academic institutions had programs that enabled students to have more like practicum situations, like I know in Teachers College, we actually went into schools and you taught in a school and then you came back and you had a seminar where you talked about this student that I tried to work with and I followed everything that the textbook said and guess what? It didn't work.
Yeah.
Right. And I think that can be applied to any profession. Mm-hmm. So I think there were more opportunities to be able to not just, again, stay within these walls and theorize, but to actually go out and try and do the project or try and teach the student or try and advise the patient. I don't know.
Whatever the program is.
To go out there and test it out and reflect on it and come back so that it's combining the theory, seeing the value because it gave you a starting point, but then seeing when I'm actually out there, what do you have to do? And a lot of times you have to think on your feet. And that would give that cyclical relationship between trying, failing, trying again.
Yep.
Right?
Yep.
And I think it might actually make us more resilient than just endeavoring towards an A.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think that makes sense.
Yeah.
Actually, you did talk about resilience and identity mm-hmm. earlier. You just mentioned the word resilience.
Yeah.
What was that like? So you mentioned, I think you mentioned something about becoming more resilient in relation to your identity.
I mean, I think it's because, I mean, I had to redefine myself in many ways because I was still Deanna and I was still at school and I was still dancing and teaching fitness and I was still the same person, but this added piece of the diabetes, it was hard. Anybody who lives with it will say how difficult it is and a lot of people don't understand and there's a lot of stigma. And at the time, I was at the beginning of not understanding that the stigma does not apply. At least it definitely doesn't apply to most of the people I know who have diabetes type 1. And so I had to be I had to be focused enough to try and continue on my path by coming to class, by having the discussions and completing the assignments, and then be, yes, resilient enough to accept the diagnosis and accept that this is part of my life and this is how it is. Meeting people on campus made a big difference for that. Going to those events that I talked about as a participant or a counselor definitely helped with that. It's rolling with the punches, like as lame as that sounds, but it was. And it was pushing myself to not let it stop what I was doing before.
Yeah.
Because it was tempting.
Yeah.
There were definitely days where I was like, I am too tired. I had a horrible night of battling a really horrible low or whatnot. I don't feel like going to class this morning. Would have been really easy. Didn't do it.
So how did you overcome that? Like, you know, you wake up and you're like, okay.
Yeah.
Everything in my body's telling me that I should just
stay in bed today.
So do you have a system in place, or was it just mindset or purpose?
I think it's mindset. You know? I think I'm, and I always have been, a little bit stubborn.
Okay. That game comes in handy.
Sometimes it's a good thing. Sometimes it's not. I think in that scenario, it was a good thing.
Okay.
And I think it was a good thing, not because I didn't listen to my body. Obviously, if I was in really bad state, I would not push myself to go. The thing I remember telling myself was, Deanna before diabetes would have done this. You're going to do this. She would be really upset at you if you let your PhD fall to the wayside after she worked so hard to get that, right? Talking as if I'm a past tense person, I'm still the same person, but it was sort of, yeah, I had to think of it as, I wanted these things before, I still want them now, and if I still want them, I still have to do the same things.
Yeah.
I have an extra challenge. It's hard. So rather than stop, I'm going to find who I need to help me. And that was, yes, people here. It was finding my medical team outside of York, just through my doctors and people who could help me. To say, you know, this is the life I want to lead, because I've always wanted to lead it. Wasn't expecting this. How do I still do that?
So as your challenge increased, you then added some support mechanisms.
Support.
And in this case was your team.
Yeah, my team.
Yeah,
you need a team.
Yeah.
And I think that's another thing students come in thinking is that I'm in this alone.
Yeah.
My professors don't want to help me. My TAs are just here to get me. and they're not. Yeah. I mean, they're your team.
Yeah.
They want to be your team. Yeah. You just have to ask.
Yeah, and it can be that simple email that you sent.
Yes.
And then look at that, open a whole
and look at that, like life-changing,
right? Life-changing,
right?
So, okay.
Mm-hmm.
Cool. So that's what it was like. So what is it like today then to live with type 1 diabetes, being postdoc and a professional? not that you weren't professional, I just mean working.
No, working professional. Not here anymore. Yeah. But I'm working in diabetes. This is not something I ever would have imagined I would have been doing. I give talks about my story and about what I'm doing and advocate for a community I never asked to be part of, but I'm so glad that I am part of now. Life in the postdoc it's happy. Like if I'm honest.
Good.
And I think the happiness comes from knowing that I went through the rigor and it was tough. I mean, it was not easy. There's a reason why a lot of people don't do this.
Mm-hmm.
But it was worth it. I know it was worth it. Because I'm doing something I never would have thought, but I'm so happy that it feels more right than anything I could have imagined doing before.
Mm-hmm.
Type 1 is still the same challenge. I think I have obviously accepted it. I know a lot more. I know my body in a way that I never, ever would have known it before. But the people I've been able to meet and the things I've been able to do, I always wanted to help people. I mean, that's what I wanted to do. I wanted to be the teacher who helped a kid feel better about themselves. And now I get to make a lot of people feel a whole lot better about themselves. And I get to help doctors help people live better lives. I'm also working for a company that was one of the first to have the patent for insulin.
Cool.
And so it feels sort of very, very much full circle to be doing what I'm doing with dance and diabetes and doctors and community. It just, yeah.
So given your student experience and what it is like now, what does it mean to be doing what you're doing today to you?
That I made the right choice. I made the right choice to be a student for as long as I was. I made the right choice to take my time and to follow my passions, which started out as dance, grew to be dance and education, and now it's dance education and diabetes. And they all live together in me and in my career now because I took the time. That's what it means. Yeah.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Very cool. I would maybe go for a bit of a lightning round now and just ask some questions. You know? Is that
yeah,
okay?
Sure.
All right. So actually, maybe on topic here, what happens to you when things get hard?
Oh, I get really emotional. I get really emotional and I usually either run about it or I bake about it.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Those are my go-tos.
Cool. So what is your sort of ideal day then currently?
For like work or?
Yeah.
Just enjoying my day?
Yeah. Okay. Work. Yeah.
Work. For work? Yeah. I would love to be able to start my day moving. So work out, go to see some of my doctors, have hopefully very meaningful conversations with them about how some of the things that I deal in might help their patients, and my day possibly teaching a dance class, maybe to a group of type ones, maybe just to a group of people who want to dance with me. That would be a great professional day.
Cool. What personal habit are you most proud of?
Probably my ability to schedule my time. It's something I had to learn very early, because when you're a kid that dances and goes to school, you learn how to do that very early. And so I've been able to juggle. I think at one point in my grad studies, I was TAing, finishing my dissertation, teaching 9 classes part-time at a fitness center, and starting D-dance. So being able to, juggle many balls, scheduling.
Scheduling, yeah, cool.
It's key.
Yeah, for sure. It's an enabler of all everything we talked about today.
It's the base.
Right? So I don't know what it is. It's like undervalued or but also overly used. How many, it's common but not common.
Oh,
it's common sense but not so common,
Yeah.
And 100%. It's different for everyone,
Oh, yeah.
So is there a message you'd like to, in closing, share with the university community, students, staff, and or faculty, or just in general?
That I think that what you're doing in school and in your education is important. I think that a lot of times, especially because in our generation, most kids end up going to university, which is not a luxury that many of our parents had. Mm-hmm. It was not as common, that I think we sort of like toss it off a little bit as if, oh, she's just going to university, or, oh, he's just going to that university for an undergrad. But undergrad is it's a big deal. It's a big commitment to say I'm going to start something and I'm going to finish it, and it's going to take me 4 years, maybe longer. And what you're doing is important, and it's time that you need to take for yourself to try as many things as possible in regards to learning, and have discussions with people who are professors in those fields and maybe know about career paths that stem off of it. And to entertain them, the skills that you learn, not just the materials, but the time management, the being able to read something and understand it, the being able to articulate something clearly and concisely, that's going to serve you in whatever career path you end up in. And hopefully you're able to just use this time and make it matter so that you're not just in a career at the end of this, but you're on a career path that takes you somewhere. And takes you somewhere fantastic.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Wonderful words.
Mm-hmm.
Well, thank you. I've enjoyed the time. And
I do too.
Thank you. And thanks for sharing your story. And actually, I think this is the first time we're speaking with a grad student, but also post-grad student, right? Like, more,
On the other side.
On the other side. So this is interesting, right?
Good, I'm glad.
They're all interesting, but I think you provide a unique perspective that we haven't had on the podcast before.
Thank you. I hope so, and I hope it helps someone.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. If people want to be in touch with you, we'll put the links in the description.
Yes,
but
definitely.
What would you like? Are there different ways to see what you're doing?
Yes. I mean, D-Dance has a website, so and it has the email for it and everything on it, and it's www.d-dance.com.org. org. Yeah.
Okay.
So yeah, perfect. It's the best place to find it.
Awesome. Thanks again.
Thank you.